Jacqueline, hanging in Chad. Like everybody else who has email, I've gotten those messages where they say that there is $8 million sitting in a bank in Nigeria and the money is just sitting there doing nothing. And somebody needs help getting that money out of the country. But until recently, when somebody explained it to me, I never really stopped to think about how this scam actually works. If you reply to those emails after some back and forth, they let you know there's a processing fee that you're going to need to pay for the courier or the insurance or whatever. And after you pay that, of course, they don't deliver the money. There'll be some problem, some bank official who needs to be bribed or some new fee. And they're very sorry. They're sure if you just do this one more thing, you'll get your money. And so you pay that, and then on and on it goes. They string you along for as long as they can. In 2007, Americans reported losing $15 million to this particular email scam. And the real number may be more like $100 million, according to the federal government's Internet Crime Complaint Center, which says that the average loss to each victim is about $2,000. Though, and here's the reason why I'm bringing all this up, it is rare for anybody to be arrested for this. The thieves are hard to catch because it turns out they really are overseas in places that American law enforcement has a hard time reaching. Lots of them are actually in Nigeria. So many that one nickname for this kind of con is to call it a 419 scam. 419 is the part of the Nigerian criminal code that deals with fraud. So, into this breach, onto this lawless frontier, where traditional police work has failed, have stepped the vigilantes. Internet vigilantes. The proud, the brave.
I live in the Midwest. I'm a 42-year-old software engineer. I've got four children.
I will identify this man and his friends only with their nom de guerre. His is Yeah Whatever. And he ran the vigilante action I'm going to tell you about today, alongside two of his friends, JoJo, somewhere below the Mason-Dixon line.
I'm early 20s, single. I am an engineer.
And there's Professor So-and-So out in a western state.
I'm 31 years old, and I have a 4-year-old daughter.
Three of these guys met on the discussion boards of a website called 419eater.com. That 419 in the name, yes, refers to the Nigerian criminal code. This is a website where internet vigilantes like themselves compare stories and share victories and swap trade secrets on how to get the email scammers. And this spring and summer, these three guys ran an operation against the scammers that not only exceeded all expectations and became kind of an internet sensation in their community, scoring more page views than anything comparable, but it also raised some interesting questions about whether these internet vigilantes, these self-appointed enforcers, go too far. Chances are, you may have heard of guys who do this. They've been around for a while. They call themselves baiters or scam baiters because they bait the con men into doing all kinds of ridiculous things. They convince them to get funny tattoos or build pyramids out of sandbags or pose for embarrassing photos. On YouTube, you can watch some West African email scammers perform on video an old Monty Python sketch about a dead parrot. They had been told over email that they could get a pile of money, a scholarship grant, if it were any good.
I wish to complain about this parrot that I bought not half an hour ago from this very shop. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. What's wrong with it? I will tell you what is wrong with it. It's dead. No, no, no.
If you're wondering what good this does anybody, the idea, besides amusing yourself and your friends on the discussion boards and administering some karmic justice, is to waste the con men's time so they have fewer hours in the day to scam people. And the bait that I'm going to tell you about today wasted an astonishing amount of the con men's time, maybe more than any bait ever. It began when somebody on the discussion board got a hold of a scam email from a Nigerian whose name was supposedly Adamu. He wrote to this Adamu, pretending to be an official from a missionary church, which is a time-tested bait.
Well, the way it typically worked was one of these scammers would contact the church. We would write back and say, well, unless you're a member of the church, we really can't get involved in any financial transactions with you. So if you want to become a member, great. Otherwise, good luck with your transaction. Then they decide that they want the money really bad. They join the church, and we just play them from there.
The idea, Yeah Whatever says, is to get the scammer off of his script for what's going to happen and onto theirs, which worked with this guy Adamu.
But we got him totally in a different direction. We offered him grant money to start a church in Nigeria.
And how much did you offer him?
$200,000.
But if Adamu wanted to get the $200,000, they told him, he would have to take a trip, a long trip, from Lagos, Nigeria, to a completely different country, Chad. When baiters send con men on this kind of trip, they refer to it as a safari. It's wild goose chase, basically. Though, of course, that's not what they told Adamu. They invented an entire cast of made-up characters who started emailing and occasionally telephoning Adamu. All of them were part of this church that they had invented. There was a Reverend Benjamin who informed Adamu that if Adamu could somehow make it to Chad, there was a missionary named Hamden there and a translator named Eric who would meet him and drive him to where he would get the $200,000. Here's Jojo.
We basically said what you need to do is you need to get a one-way ticket from Nigeria to N'Djamena, Chad, which is right on the border of Nigeria. It's about 800 or 900 miles away. You don't need to worry about clothes or food because once you get there, everything's going to be provided for you. And we're going to send our missionary, Hamden, we're going to send him to pick you up in N'Djamena, and you're going to leave with the $200,000. You know, everything's going to be taken care of once you get to N'Djamena.
To help the church representatives recognize Adamu in the town square in N'Djamena, they ask Adamu to wear a white robe and a bright pink sash and hold a sign with a slightly obscene message about Muhammad, this in the middle of a Muslim country. Now, to give you a sense of what Chad is like, somebody posts on the Scambaiter discussion board the official travel advisory for Chad that was issued by the Canadian government. It describes the entire country as unstable. Possible clashes between rebels and government troops, it says, civil unrest and violent incidents can occur at all times, including in N'Djamena, Adamu's first stop. There are live minefields, there are roaming armed militias, there are bandits.
Yeah, it's very dangerous.
And then are you trying to get him hurt or are you just trying to scare him?
No, we're not trying to get him hurt.
We're not trying to get him hurt, but it's really just isolating him. What we wanted to do was just isolate him, get him out there, cut off from any ability to communicate with potential real-life victims, and keep him there as long as we could.
And on April 1st, they start getting emails from Adamu saying that he has arrived in Chad, but there is nobody there to meet him. They email back, explaining that Hamden's car broke down on the road halfway between N'Djamena and a town called Abeche, and that's why Hamden isn't there to pick him up. And right away, Adamu writes back to them saying his situation is pretty rough. He's traveling, by the way, with a man who he identifies as his brother, who may or may not be his real brother.
This is an excerpt from something on April 3rd. Please, I am not okay here since 4 days now I am stranded in N'Djamena. The worst is I don't have single money with me here. Please. it's hard to read these without even laughing. Please, for God's sake, tell Hamden to come today or latest tomorrow. No food for me, no water to drink because of the language problem. No English, only Arabic language and Hausa. That is why I come with my brother that can speak Hausa, but not Arabic. I am very, very hungry.
And he writes in another email around the same time, you call me as soon as you reach. Please, no food, no water since 4 days now. What do you think's really happening? Do you really believe that he has no food and no water?
No.
Nope.
No. I mean, he's got money to check the internet.
Right.
You know, What kind of priorities are those? These guys are used to telling lies for a living. I don't disagree that it probably is pretty bad there, but, you know, he's not as hungry as he claims.
For the next few weeks, the truth of Adamu's situation, as best as they can figure, is this. He's living at the bus station, sleeping outside, still in the same clothes he arrived in. He has a little money to email them from the internet cafe, but very soon his cell phone dies. This is pretty much exactly the kind of misery that the baiters had hoped to inflict in the first place, and on the discussion boards with their peers, there's a lot of high-fiving and celebration. Ha ha ha, I love this, somebody writes. I almost feel sorry for him. But not really. And at this point, the baiters move to phase two of their plan. N'Djamena is bad, but now they do everything they can to convince Adamu to come to Abeche, 400 miles further from home, and 400 miles closer to a part of the world you've probably heard of, Darfur, which is just on the other side of the border between Chad and Sudan. Phase two will take him to the town of Abeche, which is still in Chad, but less than 100 miles from the border. Conditions there are much more dangerous than in N'Djamena. If he hits a beche, Professor So-and-so writes on the discussion board, he is more screwed than he can even imagine. To lure him there, they send him fake receipts for Western Union money transfers that he can only pick up at the Western Union office in Abeche. They try to convince him to join Hamden, whose car is supposedly still stuck halfway to Abeche. And Yeah Whatever writes an email, pretending to be Eric, the church's translator, talking about how great it is all going to be once he gets to Abeche. If Yeah Whatever and his buddies sound surprisingly gleeful as they talk about this, well, we'll get to that.
Brother Adamu, you will be happy to know that Abeche is a quiet, very small town, just a couple hundred people. Unlike in Jemena, everything in Abeche is easy to find, and everyone there is far more friendly. Really not true, but anyway. We live in the building exactly 20 meters to the west of the UN office. It's easy to find that building. It is the only building in the center of town that has satellite dishes all over it. We don't really know if there is such a building, but... We thought it sounded nice. Anyhow, everyone knows us in Abeche. All you need to do is ask for Hamdan or me. Everyone knows us. I look forward to finally meeting you and your brother. This has taken way too long already, and I'm sure that both of you and your brother are looking forward to the plane ride back home.
So you're trying to get into Abeche, and at one point you actually email him saying, okay, the guy's coming today with the car, and then he doesn't answer that email fast enough, and then you email him again saying, where were you? We sent the guy with the car just to...
We actually had the driver call him. We asked
You had him call him.
Yeah, another baiter. I asked him if he would make the call, so he had a voice modulation software and software that he could add sounds, so he put a sound of like a busy street on. And called as the driver, freaking out on him about not being able to find him and waiting 2 hours.
Wait a minute. I've been trying to call this number for 2 hours. I went there to pick you up. Ain't nobody there. Damn it, I'm crotchety. You know what? He gave me some money to give to you. I'm on my way back now. I'm leaving.
He told him he was keeping the money, and then we had to follow up and let him know exactly what happened. He missed the driver.
So that's just to make him feel as bad as possible, it seems.
It was his fault.
Oh, right.
Well, to make it his fault. You know, essentially.
That's one thing we like to do is it's never anyone's, it's never any of our fault. It's always their fault, you know. It's not our fault. It's Western Union's fault. It's not our fault, you know, that you didn't get the email. The driver was there. You know, so we create this illusion that we are being so very compliant with everything they're asking for.
Technique is exactly what the scammers do themselves. They tell you that they are doing everything possible to help you get your money. But there's always one more problem that prevents you from getting the big payout. One more hoop to go through. The scam baiters are like cops, taking the same tactics as the criminals. Don't they recognize the fact that you're using the same technique on them that they use on the people who they're scamming?
It baffles us.
You would think they would, but they don't.
You would think so.
Yeah, well, the obvious difference with us is we're not asking for money. We're just asking them to travel from one place to another. So maybe that's enough for them not to see it. It seems to work time and time again.
And then once you get them isolated, once you get them, you know, somewhere like in Jemena, well, they really don't have an option but to believe. You know, it's the same mentality that some of these victims have. They've sent so much, they've gone this far that they can't really turn back at this point.
And I've read on your discussion board, people talk about this victim mentality. Once you've given up some money or some time, to actually believe that it's a scam, it's just too horrible to think about. And it's just easier to think, oh, this is going to work out.
Right. And I think the same thing holds true with them.
The guys managed to keep Adamu and his brother waiting in N'Djamena for 21 days, which is an incredibly long time for one of these scam bait safaris. Usually they just ask a day or two. And they are nowhere near finished. They do manage to convince Adamu to go to Abeche, where conditions, as predicted, are much, much worse. Adamu gets there by telling a driver that he will pay the driver $500 when they arrive in Abeche. All they'll have to do is go to the Western Union office in Abeche, where supposedly money is waiting for them, sent by the church. Though, of course, when they show up, something is wrong with the paperwork at Western Union. They have no money to give the driver, who gets angry. Adamu writes increasingly desperate emails to his friends in the fake church. Each one begins with a pleading reminder that they are at the Cyber Cafe on Hospital Road, waiting for the church officials to finally arrive and rescue them.
My life is in great danger here because of the driver that has brought us here. Have not been pay, and he is treating our life.
Threatening, I guess.
These are being read as written, so.
Yeah.
Now there is tension. There is tension all over my body because of the driver threatening me of his money. Save me from the driver hand because he has increased his money every day. I and my brother have been with him now for 5 days in a Abeche.
And do you think it's possible at this point that the driver is threatening them? That seems like it could be possible, right?
Yes, completely.
Definitely.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't doubt that one bit. I mean, it's his phone they're using. He's paying for cafe time.
Now you write underneath this on the bulletin board posting, Jojo, these are some of the funniest emails I've ever seen. And I want to ask you about this, because on the discussion board, as you're posting this day by day as it's happening, people all through it are saying, this is knee-slappingly funny stuff. I am laughing so hard at these emails. The prof, you post on the bulletin board saying, if the following email doesn't make you laugh out loud, then we would never have fun hanging out. This is pure poetry to me. And the email is, I am begging you in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ. I and my brother are still waiting for you in Abeche, in the only cyber cafe along Hospital Road. We are waiting for you. We are still here since the driver is not happy about us. Please come so that we will be free from his hand. Please, thank you. I am waiting.
That's just gold.
Can I ask you, I think that this is just an area where I am not going to see eye to eye on this. I don't see what's funny about this.
Yeah, you've got to realize, again, these guys are overly dramatic. I understand that it is, you know, it's not the safest place in the world, but this is just a bit of drama here.
Well, again, these are not nice people, you know, and if you've been dealing with people like this as long as we have, you might find some humor in this, but I guess to people who don't do what we do, this might be a bit shocking and maybe not so funny, but again, we deal with people like this all the time, and they will tell you any lie possible to get money out of you, and they want their money, and they'll do whatever it takes to get it.
In all, Adamu and his brother wait for the church officials to show up at the Cyber Cafe on Hospital Road for nearly 3 months, all of May and all of June and most of July. Meanwhile, the Baiters switch tactics against them over and over. They keep sending Adamu into the Western Union office to pick up money transfers that never go through. Once they send him in with a note written in Arabic, a language Adamu does not speak, to show the clerk. Here's what the note says.
I am a criminal. Please arrest me. I hate Muhammad, and Mecca is a hellhole. I love Israel. I love George Bush. I think he should invade Chad and remove this ugly country off the map. Muhammad is a demonic pedophile. I hate Muslims. I hate Chad. I hate this country and its people. I'm about to rob this place.
Do you know if he actually showed this to the Western Union person?
He did not show it to the Western Union person.
Nothing happened. We were hoping at that point to get him arrested.
No. I don't think he really brought it there. No way.
At some point during his time in Abeche, Adamu starts saying that his brother is injured. His brother's leg was hurt, Adamu says, when they fled a rebel battle. To find out what was true and what was just another lie, I tried to contact Adamu by email and by telephone. I got some help from a Nigerian journalist in Lagos. He talked to Adamu several times, tried to convince him to come on the air and give his side of this whole story. Adamu refused. He said he knew nothing about this, that we must have the wrong man. But back when Adamu was still in Abeche, the Baiters came up with a way to intercept the emails that Adamu sent to two guys who appear to be his bosses back home in Nigeria, and also to intercept the emails that those two guys sent to him. This is one of the emails that Adamu sends to those guys back home about all this. Remember, he has no idea that the Baiters are reading his private emails, so this is about as close as we ever get to seeing how bad his situation really was. Professor So-and-so reads,
Dear CZ, we are in great danger now. Please, can you call Annie to go and borrow money for us because brother is in danger if he die here. All of us are in a big problem.
And jump down to the next one where he's writing in ND.
Sure. Dear ND, we are not happy with your email you send to us. I told you that we are in danger here in Chad, and brother broke his leg because of the attack, the rebel attack us here. We escaped by God help, and there's no one to assist us. We are sleeping outside since in the desert. Please, Andy, don't let us die here because of transport money to come back home, please.
And so, do you think the brother's leg is hurt?
I don't know.
I don't know. I do think there might be something to that, because that is kind of a recurring theme.
Well, in the last call that I had with Adamu, he was explaining about how his brother got really sick, and you know, they were having a hard time begging for medication money. And there was something in his voice when I was talking with him that I actually did believe that something happened.
Yeah.
He's there a total of 106 days he's gone from home. And then when we were talking with him on the phone, you know, one day, I think he's just kind of given up hope. You know, he doesn't have money to check his email. I think he's just kind of frustrated at the way things have gone. And we end up telling him that his mother died. You know, which was a pretty big deal. He hasn't really been in contact with home as far as we know.
I mean, at that point, we were just kind of getting bored with him. I mean, there wasn't much else we could do with him. We knew he wasn't going to travel anywhere else. I don't know. We had nothing to lose, and thought, why not?
Don't you think it's kind of harsh telling somebody that their mother is dead?
Yeah, that's a little creepy. I don't know. We were talking one morning, and I don't remember who came up with the idea, but it just, you know, it didn't sit right for a minute or two, and why not? So we
but think about the irony of this. You think that's one thing that's kind of funny was the response on the forum.
Yeah. And,
you know, the same people that were like, oh, this is great. This is hilarious. You sent him to Chad. Oh, I can't believe you've fictitiously killed his mom.
Right. That's going too far.
Sending him to Chad, you know, in the border of Darfur is fine.
Which is real.
But fictitiously killing his mom, oh, that's, you know, that's harsh.
Kind of struck me odd, too.
Right. But it's like you're playing with his heart when you're talking to him about his mom.
Right.
Yeah. Well,
somehow that seems like it's out of the game. Like, you know what I mean? Like, like you're sending him on a goose chase to get $200,000 that he's trying to steal from a church. Okay. That's like, you know, that's, you're sort of playing his game with him. But to tell him about his mom, that's just like, it's so personal. It's like,
I know it does sound kind of creepy at first, but again, we've been dealing with people like this for years, and I don't know, maybe we just become jaded over time, but, you know, I don't know. It doesn't really bother me when we pull something like this on a guy, because his mom's not really dead.
Every now and then, in the 106 days on the discussion boards, their peers would tentatively raise questions about the ethics of what they were doing, of intentionally sending somebody like Adamu, a petty thief, who all these guys see as inexperienced and naive, to the most violent place they could, with no money or even a change of clothes. One poster writes, "At this point, I wonder to myself, what would make me feel sorry for a lad, meaning for one of these guys?" And somebody responds, "Call me a no-fun lad hugger, but I reached that point early on. Yes, he is a scammer and scumwad. On the other hand, he is also, technically speaking, a human being, and I've been wincing whenever anybody gleefully expresses the possibility that he might die. Don't get me wrong, I'm laughing my head off, but I'm also feeling a little bit uneasy as I'm laughing." Somebody else writes, "He could seriously get killed. Am I bad for thinking that's pretty cool?"
Right, I remember reading that.
What's your reaction to that?
Well, I think, you know, people come up with these hypothetical scenarios, you know, in their brain. I mean, honestly, Ira, you're in New York City, I assume, and you could get killed there. I mean, people get killed everywhere every day.
I know, but you're specifically sending them to a place where there's violence and where there's warnings not to go there, and you're putting him in a dangerous situation. Like, well, what if he did get killed? I mean, do you fear that? If that happened, would you feel like, oh, we went too far?
Well, I understand this is not going to make me the most popular guy in the world, but it wouldn't really bother me all that much, to be honest with you. These guys are pure scum as far as I'm concerned, and they don't have to go there. We just kind of put the bait out there, and they went for it. These people think they're stealing from a church and stealing from humanitarian workers. So if they got killed, well, it's two less scammers in the world.
JJ, what do you think?
You know, I don't know that I would sleep greatly at night if I knew that, but I wouldn't feel responsible. I would feel like their greed led them there, that they, you know, they chose to get up and go to a Beche.
But it wouldn't have happened if one of them were to get really, really hurt or killed. Like, it wouldn't have happened except for you.
It wouldn't have happened if it hadn't been for them. You seem to be taking that out of the equation. It's their scamming. It's their falling for this and trying to rip us off that got them into it.
Of course, Adamu could say exactly the same thing about his victims, about the Americans who fall for his email scams, that it's their own greed, trying to snag millions from a Nigerian bank, that gets them into it. If at this point you're wondering why this is the cause that these three guys took as their own, why they feel so strongly about this particular issue versus all the possible injustices they could be fighting, they all say they just kind of fell into it. None of these guys has personally lost money in an email scam, though they all know about people who've lost lots of money. Yeah, whatever says he talked to a guy in Florida who just lost his house, was in tears, asking for help, but nothing could be done for him. Knowing that this radio story about him was going to be on the air, in the last couple of days, they started talking, naturally, about the radio story on their discussion board. Yeah, whatever wrote, "I am sure that we'll be painted to look like assholes, but I am totally okay with that. We are assholes." Professor so-and-so agreed. Big-time assholes. Professor so-and-so, by the way, is the only one of these three baiters who's ever had any second thoughts about anything they did in this bait. Maybe because he's the least experienced. He's been baiting for less than a year. At first, Professor so-and-so says, he wasn't so sure that they should tell Adamu that his mom was dead.
It's what was interesting to really just kind of analyze, you know, as I was feeling. I was like, why does that feel like that? I mean, I knew it was something that I wanted to do. And I knew it was, you know, because it was really just, I don't know. It was something that...
Sadistic?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, it was a piece of psychological torture that just I think the feeling that he would have, you know, at that moment being so far and so isolated and so out of touch. And, you know, at this point, it was purely psychological what we were doing.
And then what made you then go ahead and do it if you had the hesitation?
Well, because the hesitation wasn't stronger than the desire to leave him with that feeling for even a short period of time.
Not long after they told Adamu that his mother had died, he must have called home and learned the truth. After that, the guys say, he seemed to understand that something fishy was going on. They lost contact with him. Pretty soon he managed to get home to Nigeria, which is where he is now, back in business, trying to do his email scams. Which we know because Jojo is still in contact with him. Jojo's got a different bait going now. Jojo's posing, this time as a single dad named Pancho Villa.
I just got an email from him today. He's asking for his $10,000 fee. And I told him, I said, my daughter is very sick and she's in the hospital. I said, I either have the choice to pay my daughter's hospital bills and pay for her treatment, or I can send the money to you. Here's his response. Let me advise you on the best possible things you should do. Right now, I will advise you to go to the bank, withdraw the money, and there and take it to pay for the consignment fees first. As soon as you pay this, you will use the rest of the money to pay the hospital bill. So there he is. He thinks that there's a little girl dying. And his solution is, no, send me the $10,000, let the girl die, and everything will be okay.
Jojo says that when Adamu does stuff like this, it's easy not to feel sorry for him, for what they did to him in Chad. In the days since Jojo read me that email in the studio, Adamu started to suspect that Pancho Villa was a fake. He got furious and accused Pancho of being the same guy who'd screwed with him back in Chad. He wrote an email saying, "Don't ever in your life email me again because you are a fraudster, old thief. You will die a shameful death. You're a criminal from the poorest country in Africa, Chad." In other words, he thinks Jojo lives in Chad. He thinks he's an African. And although he's got that detail wrong, when it comes to Adamu's bigger point, that everything that happened to him in Chad was at the hands of somebody exactly like himself, a fellow email scammer, somebody who tricks people and strings them along, on that point, he's exactly right. Coming up, the dirtiest sounding financial thing you can do on Wall Street. And I am not talking about asset strippers. That's in a minute from Chicago Public Radio and Public Radio International when our program continues.